Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Work Group. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are pleased that you could be with us today. And as a reminder, we always welcome your feedback, which can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So I'm going to begin roll call of our work group members. So when I call your name, please let us know that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich. Adele Briggs-Melanson. Hans Butendeck.
Morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Goodparty. Tim Jurgis. Jim Kalamoto.
Good morning, Jim Jurgis here.
Thanks, Jim. Leslie Leonard. Hung Wu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears. And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Thank you, everybody. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their welcoming remarks.
Good morning. So we are down to crunch time. As a reminder, we have our advisory committee meeting at next month, and we need to get down to the actual recommendations letter. Fortunately, we've done a good job of memorializing all of the discussion that we have in recommendation text that's in the spreadsheet. So if you haven't reviewed the actual recommendation text, I would encourage you to do that now. Today, we will continue our adventure of going through the spreadsheet and going through the items that we have yet to have touched. Trying to get down to definitive recommendations for each of the items. You can see the list here. We've got some of the items that Clem has pointed out, that Hans has pointed out. I want to take another pass at the health status data class, as well as go through the other rows in the spreadsheet. I would like us at the end of this meeting to have clarity about what we are going to put in the recommendations letter. So, you know, if there's something that is burning for you that we have yet to have addressed and we haven't gone over it in this meeting, or if you don't see definitive recommendations texts, this would be your meeting to raise your hand and make sure the discussion we previously captured has been memorialized as recommendations, or at least that we've discussed how to memorialize it as recommendations. Hans asked a question about where do we put any remaining suggestions, tweaks on the recommendations column, and that's a very good question. You know, I would just put it in the workgroup discussion tab for now and just make sure that you send us a note that we can pick it up and sweep in any updates. And then, you know, if they're just editorial tweaks or things that we've already discussed, we can clearly incorporate them. If they're things that require discussion, we can either discuss them in this meeting or pick them up in our last remaining meeting prior to the advisory committee meeting. Stephen, anything you want to mention? You're having, I think Stephen's having computer problems. So
yeah, no, I hope you can hear me well. Thank you, Arian, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Really want to especially thank the members of the public who've joined us and encourage you to feel free to participate in the chat as it is going on, as well as take advantage of the time that is available at the end of the meeting to contribute. We have quite a number of public participants today. Really, really appreciate you being here. Also want to thank Arian and Mark and Hans and Al and other people who've really been digging in hard to look at the recommendations. One of the things that we did since the last meeting is we had a chance to meet with representatives of HL7 and to look very specifically at the work that would need to be done to get some of these recommended data elements over the line, to get them truly technically ready for nationwide exchange in terms of applicable implementation guides and standards. And I think we learned a lot and a greater appreciation of some of the challenges that would be required in doing that. So we have to remember that our work is not only to advise in terms of what we think would be nice to have, what we think would be appreciated and welcomed by the community, but also what's reasonable in terms of all of the work that needs to be done to get things into a version of US CDI. So I think we'll be hearing some of that feedback today. The other thing I think before we dive in is a question that Hans continues to raise and has raised, I think, you know, repeatedly over the last couple of years, you know, is looking for greater clarity on exactly what does it mean when an item is added to US CDI? What specific burdens does that put either on users of health IT or on vendors in terms of being able to manage all and every iteration of a data element. And I think that one of the things that we'll want to include in our recommendations is some specific clarity, this notion that if the data is collected, you know, then it shall be transmitted and exchanged, but that adding these requirements, say for a new type of a note or for a specific instrument that might be used as an assessment, that doesn't require that every system have a process for collecting that data having it, but just that they are able to accept it when it is sent, which is a subtle difference, but one that's very important as we look at what to be added to this core data set as opposed to maintaining as optional elements. And Arian, yeah. I don't know if you want to add to any of
that. Thank you for that. Maybe two other things. One is, as part of that discussion, this has come up a couple of times in address as well. How do we handle existing information that has yet to have been coded? And then just as a gloss on the point that Stephen just made about supporting interoperable if it's collected, as opposed to, you know, mandating implied mandates to collect. This is part of the transition from US CDI as really representing the core data for interoperability, trying to transition US CDI so that it can handle the data that wants to be interoperated that may have taken place across the continuum of care among actors, providers, et cetera, who have different specialties and different sub-elements that they that they're the primary capture elements or the primary capturers for. So as we were talking about, for example, note types, it is, you know, clearly illogical for a pediatric practice to capture surgical operative notes, but it is clearly not illogical for a pediatric practice to be able to consume such a note when it has been produced elsewhere, and so we don't want the inclusion of multiple note types to imply requirements to generate all of those notes, and so we've tried in our comments in the recommendations to be explicit there where that's an issue. But again, that's an area that we can continue to be to push on, and then likewise we may need to be more explicit about when we're requiring some structure where that structure hasn't previously been captured, be more explicit about how to handle legacy data. But with that, maybe we should just jump into it.
Yes,
indeed. Next slide. I think everyone knows this. Let's go on to the next one. And let us go into the spreadsheet.
I went ahead and hid a couple of columns in the spreadsheet, so hopefully we'll be able to see it more clearly. And I think, Arian, were we going to hand the mic to Clem? And
yeah, I think we have Clem up, Clem, and then
a few minutes.
Yeah.
Because Clem, I know you have put a lot of thought into this and have a lot to offer. I think we probably have time to discuss maybe at most two or three items that you have on your mind. Do we have you on audio?
While we're doing that, if we can have somebody pull up the spreadsheet.
Clem, we see you, but you're muted inside of the app.
You,
all right, there. So there's a couple, three that I'm gonna be real fast. Item 38, which is not as specific to me, but we sent you a Word document today with three panels that relate to drug abuse, alcohol abuse. And these are, I think, especially important today given the high death rate from drug abuse. It's now three times the death rate from auto accidents, but you've already kind of accepted them. They're level two and item 38, they're listed. I just want to highlight that they are already in item 38 and they are happily welcomed by HITECH.
And 38 is the instrument unique identifier?
Well, it lists a whole bunch of assessments.
No, I think the list of assessments that we included in the assessments tab already includes the notes, and it may have been row 38 sometime.
I know, entry 36, I think, is what we're talking about.
Got it, cool.
Well, there's one, if you search for alcohol, I thought it's 30.
That's right, alcohol use, yeah. That's right. This one's already.
Never mind. You're right. I'm sorry. It is 36. Yeah. So as long as that's, you know, everybody buys that, I don't need to say more about it. I just like to emphasize it's a really important deal today in the U.S. Well, the death rates are just surging for drug use, especially. The other item I'd like to just highlight a little bit. So like when you name or give a code for a panel or a survey, it includes all the questions underneath. Just be aware that SNOMED only has the summary answer in it. So they're a little different when they're both presented. The other one I'd like to talk about a little is vital signs. You know, there are, and I don't think I prepared them, but there are qualifiers for measurements of vital signs that would be nice to have, you know, standing, sitting, cuff size, that you could just use or not use at your pleasure. I think what the current comment from me says we should have pre-coordinated one. I didn't mean that. You know, I really meant we could have, but we had another five or six variables that users could use to qualify the measure. They could accomplish almost everything they would want. And I don't know if there's any stomach for that.
Yeah, Clem, this also came up in our discussion of averaging multiple observation values for blood pressure, which has been a frequent comment from public comment, both from the American Heart Association and I believe others. And in offline conversation, we noted that that would be best handled by these qualifiers. Al, I don't know if they are level one, level two, or not yet included in.
Well, could I, to comment on the average, we should clarify what's really requested by the AMA is the following, that if the initial blood pressure is high at a visit, repeat it more times. I think the typical is two or three. So I think we should clarify that. That's in their specification. It wasn't mentioned in any of the verbal discussion, but if you go to their website and read and look at their screen to enter that, it's qualified by the fact if it's high, then you should repeat it to get a better variable, better value.
And Clem, sorry, I've answered my own question. Vital sign results, dates, and time steps are in level two, but qualifiers are not yet in level one or level two. So you know, maybe the net of that recommendation of yours is that we should include the observation qualifiers, the line codes for observation qualifiers in level one or level two for future evaluation for USCDI.
And I can send you those the qualifiers. Let's see, I think I had one other item that I wanted to, smoking status. I don't know where that stands.
Oh, wait, hold on. I want to capture this before we go. So, Aaron, you said include LOIN codes for observation qualifiers in, in level two?
It's vital signs qualifiers.
Vital signs qualifiers.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, and we could put them together, but it's the same like cuff size for blood pressure, standing or sitting or lying for blood pressure, clothes on or off for weight. There's a sort of a maybe six or seven of them that some people use.
But you, I'm sorry, Aaron, without checking they are level one or level two
for inclusion in future version of USCDA. It's currently not in level two.
Okay, so it's really about exploring whether they would qualify.
Correct.
Well, I mean, I would argue that they're everywhere. I mean, people use these. You can also kind of pre-coordinate them, but it's more uncomfortable. And it's just a matter of having them pick from a bigger panel that they want to say.
Yeah, Clem, just structurally, the issue that we have is that we've bound ourselves to process where we need things to be in level one or level two before we can incorporate them into USCDI.
Yeah, I don't like it, but I understand it.
Yep.
So that is a recommendation then. Are we, does anybody have an objection to us including that in our recommendations for ONC to explore whether vital signs could make it up into level two for future inclusion? And I think while we're here, we should also look at, discuss specifically the recommendations that we got from the AMA because they did come in twice, which was very nice. And I think we've had a conversation with Al about that averages of existing data elements are simply mathematical operations that any system can perform. And it is a little difficult to define what is, you know, when we're talking about average, are they average of three taken 3 years apart or 3 minutes apart? Or is it an average of three or five or 10? Is it, you know, an average for an entire ICU stay, et cetera? I don't think that even though the notion of the average blood pressure, which is at level two, you know, it would be, you know, theoretically possible that ONC for the most part has left it up to receiving systems to do the math and provide calculated values such as an average of multiple blood pressures.
But can I just, Steve, they are not asking for averages over intensive care. It's specifically stated that at a visit, if the first blood pressure is high, to repeat it a couple of times. We could create LOIN codes to make that clear if it's important. And a word average is also a synonym for mean. There are already a number of mean blood pressures, but they have different meaning. They're like mean.
We're not talking MAP. We're not talking about a mean arterial pressure or a mean blood pressure, because that would be
a typical mean blood pressure is the integrated mean from the systolic to the diastolic.
That's right. So what we're talking about is averaging multiple observations, right, following an algorithm, and that's either going to be, you know, one of these modifier codes, or it's going to be a new LOIN code that represents the use of the AHA algorithm for calculating blood pressure that assures, you know, respondents that it's not just a single observation value.
So what do we want to do with this?
So
I think we should keep it alive. And I think we should but we ought to clarify, it's just not average of anything, at least per the AMA.
Yeah, I, this either needs to be a LOINC code. So we need to defer over to LOINC to figure out how to represent it, whether it should be represented as literally a new LOINC code or whether it should be represented as one of the observation modifiers. I think would be the logical next step. And then, you know, if I were LOINC, I'd want to have a consensus summary statement or algorithm from AHA to point to, you know, something in literature that describes definitively the algorithm that primary care and others are expected to follow, which I assume exists. And then you'd want to either have the modifier or the LOINC code point specifically to that validated instrument.
Yeah, I agree.
So what does that mean for our recommendation today?
So I think we recommend that ONC work with stakeholders and LOINC to specify how this could be appropriately represented, whether as a modifier or a new LOINC code.
And save it for a future version.
Save it for a future version, yep. Because we don't know at this point, we wouldn't know how to move it forward.
Any hands up, any concerns about that? All right. Was there another one you wanted to recommend, Clem?
Let's see. I may have the number. Smoking status, I forgot how we landed on that. And in clinical notes, did we end up that there are some suggested ones, but they could use more of the available?
So we have two different recommendations that we have captured. One is to add the operative note, and the other is a repeat of our last year's recommendation that systems should be able to answer, recognize and incorporate any note identified in the LOINC hierarchy. And there's been a lively discussion with HL7 about that. I think there is a remaining concern that Hans has expressed that if we say you should be able to handle any note, that creates a substantial burden on developers. I think we've heard, two different opinions about that. One is that it really shouldn't be such a big deal, that you just say if there's a note and there's a LOINC code, you keep them straight. And then there's another concern. There's another version of the interpretation, which is that this is really substantially burdensome. And I don't know, Arian, if you want to, Hans, thank you, putting your hand up. Yeah, why don't you jump into that? Because I think, we have two recommendations that we've captured, and I don't know if we want to modify that.
Yeah, and I think the backdrop of my comment depends on, are we talking narrative notes, which is what we currently capture with the clinical notes? Because then at that point in time, there is no defined structure. There is no structure to discrete data inside the narrative node. And then it's quote unquote just a code that where you have it, indicate and use the LOINC code to indicate what kind of clinical node it is. That's one level. And that is more on the simpler level, if you will, going back to Aaron's comments generally as well. But if the intent was to be that we have structured clinical nodes, and at that point in time, those LOINC codes, document codes still apply. It's now that you apply it to a set of structured data. Then you get into the area of, for the variety of 700, 900 plus, whatever it is, document codes that are out there, what are the agreed to minimal structured sections, otherwise requirements that you have, which is currently done for 13 in CCDA, of which three are in certification and another one in the CMMI program. So I think it depends on which side do we sit on. Narrative, much straightforward, much more straightforward. If it's intended to be structured, then you're opening up a larger box of hey, what is expected to be there in a structured fashion or not for that particular document or grouping of documents.
Hans, we went offline recently, and at least my proposal is that we are talking about narrative notes only. That yep. Structured documents are a matter of implementation guidance and really a matter for the ISA, not for the USCDI. And then, the other piece that we're talking about is, which we already have in here, already have memorialized here, is by calling for narrative notes to be LOINC encoded. We are not calling for all EHRs to be able to capture all LOINC codes. Because that would be illogical. And then the last point I think that we talked about offline was how do we handle legacy data? And there, I think our proposal is that this is a going forward proposal and that when it comes to legacy data, we should have a default modifier that is a catch-all bucket for previously captured clinical narrative that might just say something like clinical narrative.
Could I weigh in a little bit? Because I think that Hans has retracted his objection to the narrative version of clinical notes.
That's right.
Yeah, and I don't see how it could be, you know, a PDF, you can take it in any system, whatever is in it, and all we're asking, saying, there's got to be a code on it. And we're doing that already across lots and lots of stuff. So I don't see how there's any burden there. They just take the code that comes in the message and stick it in the field they already have.
Yeah, I think the original or the prior part of the discussion is that I think we were still not sure, or at least I wasn't, based on the text and the discussion where we were talking narrative and structured. And by clarifying that and making sure that that is, and in the current text that is much more clear, that's more appropriate at this stage if we're dealing with that number of codes potentially out there. Effectively, the note. That's really what you're asking here.
Dave McCauley actually had a comment in the chat that spoke to that too.
Yes. David, do you want to put voice to that or shall we read it for you?
I think I'm in violent agreement with Clem and Hans that exchange of unstructured narrative is just a simple must have. It's not hard. We already do it with everything else. The focus and obsession with structure is what has gotten us into trouble. And we've sometimes, you know, punish the adequate by trying to be better. Adequate is text. And if you've got text, you got to be able to share it. I would agree with Arian that there might be a need for a catch-all, not otherwise classified note type for legacy data that didn't have a LOINC code when it was initially captured, because it's still valuable. People can read and understand it.
Yeah, I've dropped the memorialization of the conversation that we had offline into the chat, and I will take the action to go back through the recommendation text to make sure that we fully captured this in the recommendation text. I think it captures the sense of the work group, unless there's significant objections. And Hans, you have your hand back up.
Yep, and that's maybe to as you're going to be further crafting that. If you look at the first paragraph in the final recommendation column K, we recommend that UCDIV3 include all note types coded in LOINC document ontology. And then if that progresses along the line of to categorize the narrative unstructured notes, that might help indicate is that what's really, what are we doing with that code? We're really putting on it to say is that this narrative represents that kind of a note.
Yeah, that's what this refers to is alluding to, but we can say to categorize. We've already included recommendation is not intended to suggest that all certified health IT need to generate all possible notes. We need to also add in I think we've already got that. I don't know if Al's done all the work or if,
I just put that in. LOINC should consider developing a code for legacy notes not coded specifically at the time of creation.
And
so I think we've got that comment
about the idea of adding the FDA's UDI to lab messages, which I think is I think it's a good idea, but there are some issues. For example,
Clem, just a process question. We're gonna go. I think we're gonna. I think we want to close this topic out. I think okay. we have over to Hans, and then we can bring in the topic of lab.
Okay, Hans, where do you want us to go?
Related person name and relationship.
For 100, what's the number?
That's a good question. I don't have that on my cheat sheet here.
Okay. It would be under... demographics?
Yes, demographics.
Yeah. Related.
Patient demographics, is that where it goes?
It is on demographics. It is 56.
56, there we go. All right.
So the question there is that the way it's described, it's not clear what is intended to be achieved because there is a potential overlap with care team. So are the related... interested are they in the context of a care team or other defined relationship like subscriber otherwise, or is this a general purpose relationship that you just want to know that they are the next of kin, but they have no role in the care team and otherwise? So from that perspective, are we trying to update the care team class really and have the relationship type appropriately defined and expanded to achieve this? Or are we truly talking about just a relationship with somebody else that you would like to document? No indication what the purpose is of that relationship or the interest is of documenting it other than just documenting the relationship.
So my read of this is that related person is much more of a personal relationship as opposed to a care team relationship. So I think what you're asking for is for that to be clarified if this were to be included in final version 3. Is that right?
Correct. And with the question of is that if the intent is just the personal relationship, no implication on care team, financial guarantor, whatever else there might be for which you need to have that relationship. If it's just that, it would be helpful to identify is the use case a little bit better where certain data is helpful to have. And I'm not saying there isn't, but just for clarity on the purpose that then can help downstream to get it into the right spot.
And then clarify the use case.
Correct. Because right now it's somewhat unclear as to what direction it's going, and therefore I might end up in a different spot than intended. I certainly would not necessarily end up right now in the just the relationship, and which relationships then do I care about?
Anyone want to, Al, go on.
So I appreciate the request for additional clarity. That's one of the key things that we're looking for as we finalize V3. The original intent of this was, I'm going to say, at least twofold. One of them is to provide the definitions required for some records linkage, such as maternal child records linkage. And so associating a demographic or associating a clinical element like a lab result, but including blood type or some of the other clinical things, but to associate a demographic of a relative to a patient. So that's for records linkage. It's also to help with identification, patient matching. So, you know, a patient with a particular person as a related person can help with matching, especially newborns, twins, things like that. So the patient matching and records linkage is the primary use case. And Hans, I agree that related person can be a part of the care team, oftentimes are, but that's not the intent for this. And we certainly are you know, eager to provide some clarity around that.
That would be great because in the example that you used, for example, for record matching, that the approach that is then taken on how to express the data relevant for that, for example, mother's maiden name, something like that, is not necessarily using a related person relationship to do it because then it's based on how that's structured. So having that clarity would be good because it can help make sure that the standards land in the right spot.
Mark?
Thanks. I can't find it in the filtering now, but I did make a comment a while ago, weeks ago, about on the same thing, and it may help with the clarification finding that that there was that the terminology descriptions appeared to overlap, but the HL7 exchange standards appeared to differentiate the two. So I'm just mentioning that as a place to pay attention about whether there's overlap between care team and related person or not, and in which place. Thank you.
Yeah, and if I can react to Mark on that, is that I think on the standard side, the distinction has been done for a variety of reasons to understand where to use what. So be a challenging one to adjust. That's why if on this side of USCD, I clarify what the purpose is, we can end up in the right bucket or even a third place if it's meant for record matching, because then we need to look at it differently yet again.
Great.
But I think one of the, at the very least, then definitions need to change so that we don't, when you just read the definition of the term, we don't get confused that they're referring to the same thing.
Fair point. Agreed.
Is the recommendation as captured, or the two recommendations, is that sufficient, or do we need to add to that? Maybe Grace, you want to get a word in?
Yes, I just wanted to comment that my understanding when we had this discussion was that this is the primary care partner who is potentially coordinating the care, who is the main contact for a patient. And just to give an example, through the pandemic, because of COVID-19, no visitor policies, no one was allowed inside. So who was the care team supposed to contact? There was constant barriers in communication. So identifying who is helping manage someone with a chronic illness, someone who has multiple comorbidities, perhaps an aging parent, someone who has a life-altering, life-limiting condition, who is there on that day-to-day basis? And that can be certainly different from a designated executor of the estate or a personal representative, or even the next related person. Those two categories of individuals may not be the primary care partner responsible for the day-to-day in and outs of care for a particular patient.
You know, it's a really good point, Grace. That is to say, is there a value set that should be recommended for this related person relationship, or are we anticipating that this would simply be a free text field?
My hope is that we want to avoid that when the phone call comes in from a primary care partner, that they don't get the, well, because of HIPAA, we can't give you any information. So that would be one of the use cases here, to not block information from people that are responsible for the daily care coordination.
Yeah. And again, I think what we can do is we can capture the content. We clearly aren't going to have an interpretation of HIPAA in USCDI, but I think we can at least capture from the perspective of interoperability that this is the contact.
Hans?
Yeah, I really appreciate Grace's examples. They're good ones, and they actually will be ones that likely would end up in care team. And hence, that if that was the intent of related person on this proposal, it should be phrased and clarified a way to make sure it would end up in care team, as opposed to a relationship that a related person that is much more generic, not intended for any particular person other than it's my father, my mother, my sister, my brother, whatever it might be, as that kind of relationship. So that's why we have to be very a little bit more precise than what we have today.
So do we have a proposed recommendation text?
From my perspective, is that if it's more clear whether it's one or the other, is okay, as long as it's clear what the intent is, so we end up in the right spot in the standard.
So Al, do you want to comment on that?
I was going to confirm Hans's reading on Grace's use case, that somebody who's that is a way of being involved with the care, being either a party to whom information can be confirmed, can be disclosed, seems to fall into a category of care team member, which typically will include something like a custodian, decision maker, guardian, people that are generally accepted as those who can receive information. So I think that Hans's take on that this would not be that sort of person would not be captured by relationship type, but rather by care team member role. And if we'll make sure that we try and clarify even clarifying some of the examples of care team members so that we can incorporate that sort of thing.
Yeah. So what's the proposed recommendation here for related person name and relationship?
sounds like what Al is saying is that the relationship that Grace described is more of a care team relationship.
Correct.
And that the one that for which this was proposed and brought forward is more of a demographics relationship.
That's what I'm hearing too. And in the first paragraph in the recommendation, I think that is mostly captured.
I'm just trying to get precise about what should we capture under related NEMA. So I think we agree that we recommend that data capture for persons consulted in the care of the patient should belong in the care team. What is the purpose for this field?
The way I'm hearing it, and curious whether Al can confirm that I heard that right, is that the purpose here is to effectively capture simple demographic relationship that do not reflect a responsibility from a care, financial, or other aspect of the care delivery or the care process or health process.
Hans, and I confirm that's what we were thinking when we put this together. Mother's maiden name is one of them. That's a something of a matching, patient matching sort of concept or use case, and it's to incorporate things like next of kin and mother's maiden name as two examples. And so as far as like shaping the recommendation, my suggestion is to either say, as we say right now, should clarify the intent, or if there's a belief that particular scope that I laid out isn't really what you think it ought to be, then have it be a more directive recommendation to something like change the scope from to. But if it sounds like the committee is, or the work group is satisfied with that explanation as the original scope, simply clarifying or confirming that it would be a sufficient recommendation.
Yeah. And I just as an interesting on the two examples you used, the mother's maiden name would in the standards end up in a completely different spot than a related person to indicate that you are a family member.
I put myself in the category of somebody who's thinking about how to design interoperability specifications, and you know I'm putting my computer science hat on, and I need an algorithm to figure out when I'm drawing from this field versus when I'm drawing from other fields. And I think I'm falling a little short.
Could I chime in?
Actually, Mark's got his hand up first.
Okay, sorry, Mark.
No problem. So I just want to flag that the language in the final recommendation for entry 56 is not capturing at least what concerned me in entry 57, which is the apparent overlap with care team. And we've been discussing that, but to Arian's question, what's the precise language? We haven't really addressed that overlap point in our final recommendation. And I do think we do need to get some clarification, at least in the definition, so that it doesn't appear that they're referring to the same thing. So
yeah.
Can I make a recommendation?
And I think we know it's not, but we don't know what it is. Al, sorry, go ahead.
So Mark, that particular point is really a good one. And my suggestion would be, instead of just saying clarify, I would maybe suggest that we use the term distinguish between related person and care team member.
And
you know,
clarify, thank you.
Clarify definitions of the two to distinguish between the two.
And I would actually add a third one, is that if the intent is for purpose of matching, that needs to be clear too, because that might be handled differently than either of the other two.
This is Steve Heitner. I think it's
Steve, hold on. Clem had his hand up.
Yeah, well, the idea of matching, I think I'd characterize it as identification. And if anyone has used White Pages or any of these things, you can look up, find people's phone numbers. They include related people. And the purpose is to figure out if that's the person you're asking about, you know? So I think it's really an identification tool or demographics or however you want to think about it. But I think that's probably what it's important for. And if that word could be found in the right place, it might make the distinction.
All right. Ike?
Thank you. I think part of the issue is looking at how are we defining or how is care team...
Ike, we can't hear you.
Speak up a little.
Sorry, is that better?
Yes.
Sorry. I think part of the issue is looking at what constitutes the definition of a care team today and how we're looking at that definition being changed over time, as well as looking at expanded consumption of the US CDI across new participants in health information exchange. Not that we're going to resolve what the definition of a care team is here and now, but it may be something that we might include as a recommendation as secondary effort to looking at revisiting or redefining or reexamining what that means in the context of information exchange. You know, medical professionals, individual patient and family members, you know, does a patient define what their care team looks like, or is somebody else defining it for them?
So do we need to make any further changes to this recommendation, or can we leave this where it stands?
I think Al's comment about distinguishing.
I got that. I got distinguish.
It's not a personal relationship. It's a demographic relationship.
Demographic.
The intent here is to identify a simple demographic relationship with no implication on for inclusion in a care team.
Okay, how's that?
Yeah, and I would be inclined to add is that clinical care team is very much on the clinical side, but there are administrative, like who's the subscriber, who's the guarantor, et cetera, that are typically not done in a care team, but there are still very specific relationships that are beyond a simple demographic.
They're beyond this, right? So there's zero implication for any inclusion of any data here that there is administrative, clinical, any relationship to the ongoing care or management.
Should I just take that out and leave it at this?
It would be helpful to recognize is that the purpose of them is sounds like it's not only for simple demographic relationship. If there is an interest to also use the data for identification purposes, that should be clarified in the definition so that we understand that.
I dropped a proposed text in the chat. I don't know if that.
I unfortunately can't copy paste from.
I unfortunately
from the Zoom
can't.
Chat.
I've got the two computers set up to hit the spreadsheet and the yeah.
Is it limited to simple demographic relationships, and not intended to imply participation in the care? Okay. All right.
We can go offline and clean this up.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Yeah. Arian, if you can tweak it, that would be great.
Yep.
All right. Hans, did you have another one?
I can skip the other one because that's a simple note on removing a reference that shouldn't be there.
Bless you, my friend. All right. Good. Let's move on. Next up, thank you both. We wanted to jump into health status, entries 26 to 36 and 70. And I think, Mark, you had some things you wanted to say about those.
I just had one suggestion about 70. I thought 70 was the only one we were considering today, so that's all that I looked at.
All right.
And that was the recommendation for ICF. And I just noted the...
Yes.
That the recommendation about ICF was attributed to all three of the data elements. We've already talked about disability status as being a self-reported item using the six ACS questions and the seventh from the Washington group. So my comment there is I believe the ICF would not apply to that particular data element, and that for the other two, functional status and cognitive slash mental status, that we recommend that ONC explore whether the ICF value set should be included, as we've been doing with some of the other named value sets. So that would be a part of the sorting process on the back end.
All right. Thank you, Mark, because we haven't had a chance to discuss this one, though we did get it into the spreadsheet. So I think what you're saying is that the recommendation is that ONC consider, we'll take out might, whether ICF value set should be included among value sets for functional status and cognitive mental status. Is that good enough?
Good enough. It sounds like we don't need to say and not disability status, because ONC isn't going to be seeing what the original recommendation was.
Right.
So you said you would like to include the exclusion?
No.
Okay, no. You don't think that's necessary.
Which it's probably not necessary. Especially Perfect. Since everybody's on the phone call.
Indeed. All right. Anything else on ICF? This was a long and enlightening presentation from Matt Elrod a few weeks back. We wanted to capture this. All right. And was there anything else in the broader area of health status that we needed to revisit from anyone?
Clem, your hands up.
Clem, you're on mute.
I just want to make sure that the drinking and alcohol assessments are in. I believe they are, but I just like to hear a confirmation.
Yes, I believe they were listed, yes.
That's right. They're listed as example value sets.
Okay.
Great.
And I'd still like to come back to smoking sometime, but rather than have it just be a list of
I think we wanted to go to lab next.
Yeah, I was going to suggest we go to lab.
38 through 43. Everybody close your eyes while he scrolls up. So we captured our recommendations actually in 43, 42 and 43.
So I believe, Hans, you have some comments on test kit.
Yes.
And Stephen, at the appropriate time, I have a radical suggestion.
Ooh, so. Bated breath. Go ahead, Hans.
Well, I'm curious what I want to hear, Arian.
Yeah, so Hans, my radical suggestion is that we incorporate everything in level 2 that is also is also part of the CLIA-defined set for transmission. And there's actually a fair amount of stuff in level 2. And if we're given enough time, I can go find all the level 2 attributes that are also included in CLIA. But that's the radical suggestion on the table for me. But why don't we go through the test kit recommendation?
Is that, I'm not sure whether test kit is part of an identifier is part of CLIA per se, but
yeah, test kit's not part of CLIA. That's right.
Yeah. So is your suggestion additive or instead of that changes maybe my comment.
My suggestion is additive. So in my suggestion would be to add result status, date and time. There's actually two level 2 recommendations that are the same thing. Source site we already are proposing including. And then in level 1, we also have the test interpretation. And we would propose including all of those because they are all also included in CLIA.
So, yeah, so the two comments, I'll start with the test kit identifier. The challenge there is that for inclusion at this point in time, that the ability to capture that at the level of interest, UDI, is very hard at this moment because that needs to start at the time of performing the test. and the devices, if you take the flow from the device that actually performs the measure, it does not pass it on as part of a test result and say, hey, I measured this and this is my UDI, if you will. That would be nice, ideal in a way. But that means is that in the process, somebody by way of reading or scanning or otherwise needs to do that. And it has been a very challenging discussion, not to the intent, but the viability to actually make that happen. So the desire is understood, but at that level of specificity, extremely hard to do in today's environment of how that data is or is not available. At best, you could get a higher level, much more generic, not very unique identifier of the device the test kit used. The other part is that you're starting to really pull in from a, and that's just awareness in this context, you're starting to pull in data that goes from an observation to the specimen, to the test results, to the device that's being used, et cetera. You're starting to pull in a lot more that is extra work to figure out how to do that right now that is not necessarily directly on the observation. So just to keep that effort in mind, that is more substantial to bring it in. So those two things in combination is where I raised the question, is that are we far enough along at this process that, again, not arguing the validity of the underlying concept, because anything that is associated with EI starts to become relevant, but it is a much more bigger chunk to chew off. So I'd be very cautious to recommend to include that at this stage.
You're specifically the test kit unique ID. That's the one you're concerned about?
Correct. And then the other parts that Arian addresses, that the principle of it, no concern. That fits very well with the goal of USCDI in our minds to be much more than a core set, that it really needs to be EHI. I think that the comment made earlier at the start of it is that how do we make sure that this does not mean that everybody needs to support that? If you're an EHR, if you're an LIS, then you much more need that. If you are other systems, you need that much less. You might just need a couple of the attributes. If you are doing the actual formal reporting of the report, you have to. If you get further and further downstream, or you're just unrelated to it, still HIT, it's just not that important. So it goes back to
The intent is to include the items that are critical for interpretation. So, you know, what was the actual date time that the lab was performed? Right. The value is pretty meaningless without that. We need the reference range. Reference range isn't currently included in level one or level two. So I think we'd want reference range to be in level one or level two. Interpretation flag, again, reference range is, I think, more generally applicable than the interpretation flag. But the intent would be to capture the bundle of elements that are critical for the interpretation of a value, the interpretation of a value in context.
So, Arian, your radical suggestion in concert with Hans's concern about test kit unique identifier would substantially change our recommendation. Shall we take a stab at changing that? I see some hands up, including Clem.
Yeah, well, the main thing, there's three or four things that haven't been mentioned. Firstly, every test kit doesn't have a code yet. In fact, I read the website talking about progress. The thing they're most interested in getting into their system were implantables. And I think it said only 30, 40% of them were coded so far. So that's one thing. Second thing is, talking to a major lab, 55% of their lab tests are not FDA approved. They don't have these codes. They're called laboratory developed systems. The third thing, so I think what we really need to do is to get input from laboratories before we move too fast on this. There may be difficult process problems. Many laboratories will tweak their instruments to be the same if they're two different instruments. That won't show up necessarily in the FDA stuff. But they have to switch at night sometimes, or they got a stat and a non-stat. So I think we should pay attention, get deeper knowledge about this before we do it. I think in theory, it's a good idea, you know, but we ought to make sure we're not stepping into a mud hole.
And Clem, I think your recommendations are your concerns are specific to test kit unique identifier, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Hung?
Oh, I like Alan. I like Arian's suggestion for sure, by the way.
Okay. Hung?
Well, my concern is right now, this is already required, right? In the snow, I'm sorry, in the Livid file, the test kit and instrument identifiers are one of the required elements to make the Livid file work. And also the public health agencies require the reporting of the instrument and test kit information to the public health agencies for COVID testing. And so this is already a required element and a burden on the laboratories. And yet there is no established functionality or requirement for the LIS and EHR systems to support it and to help the laboratories be able to do this. And so people are already having to wrangle with this requirement, despite the fact that we are not helping them with being able to meet the requirements by moving the functionality forward. And so I do understand that everything is not perfect, but at the same time, you know, this is a real world situation where people are trying their best to wrangle with this and doing it manually. And so even being able to have a field in the LIS and EHR to be able to capture this information and transmit it on, rather than having it flow from the instrument to every instance, would be an improvement over having to manually enter it in a portal or putting on a Excel spreadsheet or a flat file to pass it on. And so while I share the concern that you know, not every UDI, not every test is going to have a UDI, they are out there for the COVID testing. And this would, and speaking with Epic, they do feel that this would be a good addition and would provide some functionality.
Hans?
Yeah, just a partly response, having been involved in the definition of LIVET and the definition of ELR to address test kit identifiers. Is that on LIVET side, yes, there is in the standard spreadsheet, which is otherwise not yet accepted and required to be supported by others, but it's started to get some traction on the FDA SHIELD effort. It is possible to capture it, it's just that it's hard to capture. So I like more the comment that that David McCauley is making, is that it's much more a shoot than a shell. Also, having been part of the ELR updates that were necessary, that are still going through some further work to include the ability to have test kit identifies in the standard there, it is the same challenge of the standard could accommodate it, but the practice and the process is something that is just not there yet to get it at the level of detail that is interested, and do it in a way that is not a burden on those that are in between the generation of the test and moving it along. So just as a general perspective, stating it's required, it's desired, work is progressing, but the level of requiredness is still not at the level that perhaps is desired.
And Hans, you know, I think we do have this notion of something a little higher than a should and lower than a required, which is required if present or required if available, required if relevant. It's called different things in different standards bodies.
Yes, it's and we that means is that you have to demonstrate you can do it. In this particular case, where the thoughts are typically around the EHRs, less around the LIS system, it's the lab system that needs to be able to do this.
Got it.
You know, get it in the right spot. The systems used by the clinicians to review the result.
Not have it. That's right.
They're not going to be entered in there. It's all on at the source or nowhere.
That's right. And then the second question to your point is, do the receiving systems routinely have a slot for it? And the answer is, broadly speaking, no.
That might actually not be as big a problem if they receive it, but they first have to receive it and the source cannot provide it. that's where more the problem is.
Okay, so then that does feel more like a required if present. Two different problems. One is I don't have a slot for it. I've got to go create a slot for it in order to conform to US CDI. The second is it required? And what do I do if it's not there? And that one, I think we can handle with a required if present. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify the concern on the table. We should probably go to Steve, to Ike, and to David.
Thank you so much for that. I think part of, this is Steve Eichner. I think part of the question from a public health perspective, looking at things like COVID-19 test, where it is a required field to be reported, as we look at the information flow that public health typically gets for that, typically it comes out of an LIS in addition to potentially coming out of an EHR. As we look at the CDI standards, if there is a standard or a place for it in the US CDI, it does provide an opportunity for it to be included in EHR standards, and that enables hospitals and other users of EHRs to have a more specified place in which to receive it, which would then make it easier for them to transmit it to public health when required and if it were available. It also gives the hospitals an opportunity to catch the information sent to them by an LIS or a LIMS system. So I think there's value in including it in the US CDI. It may not be populated fully at this point, but it is a direction where we're going. And including a field for it seems to make sense. Thank you.
David?
Yeah, I would just agree that this makes sense, that it's valuable and in some cases essential for proper interpretation of the lab test that was ordered and paid for and affects patient care. So if you have it, if your system can send it, you should send it. It makes complete sense, just like range of normal and abnormal flag and all of the other fields that we've talked about. If you have it, you should send it. The fact that it creates a burden, well, that's what regulations are for, is to create burdens for compliance for good quality care.
Okay, so Arian, test kit unique ID, is it? Does it go in this new list?
So I think what we're hearing, let me just summarize what I think we're hearing from the work group. I think we're hearing from Hans that there's no burden to receive the data because it is, the slot for it is often in systems and the burden for adding the slot is low. I think we hear significant concerns about requiring it because it is not routinely available at source. I haven't heard significant objection to a required if available designation. And it's not clear that US CDI Core currently has the required if available, but there's a lot of other areas. So for example, in lab, there are many things that are required if you have them or if they're relevant and are not required in other times. And I don't think that's unusual for laboratory data. It's a useful concept to include in US CDI.
So it sounds like it's back in.
Well, real quick clarification. If the US CDI is describing a method of sending it if you have it, but not looking at whether it's required or not, just if you've got it, here's a method for transmitting it.
That's exactly what we're saying by required if present.
Right, the US CDI doesn't really have an impact as to whether it's required or not from a decision-making standpoint.
So did I capture all, Arian? Oh, Al's up.
Yeah,
go ahead, Al.
The one more that is in CLIA and that also has comments in level 2 is UOM, unit of measure.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
And interpretation.
Okay.
And then we also would want a future iteration of US CDI to contemplate reference range.
And Aaron, I just dropped in a note, is that my statement of it might not be as big a concern. That's what I
gotcha.
I want to double check, but there are systems that I know it's not a concern. There are systems that, based on the focus of them, it would be more of a concern because they are specialized in a particular area where this would not come up as much. So that's why. And it goes back to our, if you have it, if you don't have it, et cetera, it's that entire stratification thing.
Yeah, my detailed knowledge in the space goes back a decade. So David's comment may be the more relevant one, which is, hey, we've had years. Al.
So just as a point of clarification, to be a data element in USCDI, you have to be updated to, or to be certified to an updated version of USCDI means the ability to capture and do an exchange.
Yep.
A data element. So the ability to capture means it can capture it, not it has to be if relevant.
Right. And that's, it would not
the
be
meaning of a data element in USCDI.
Yeah. And Al, I think maybe one clarification there. So useful correction, which is that if we're certified to USCDI V3 in the future, if we don't have this data element, we need to add it. Al, with respect to capture, it would be illogical to manually enter in many cases. Maybe I guess you could contemplate manual entry, but it wouldn't be. I can't think of that many cases where, for example, a pediatric EHR would want to manually enter the test kit unless you're doing. Never mind. I can think of multiple situations where you'd want to enter this information. But typically, we would want to have it captured from the perspective of interoperability of data flows from downstream systems that had captured that at source.
All right, please look at the language and let me know if it's adequate.
Yep.
Going once, going twice, sold. Thank you. Thank you all. All right, that brings us, it almost brings us to public comment. That's amazing.
Yeah, what's nice about this is my objection to the onesie twosie ads here have been, it's not clear what we're adding to. I think I've now recognized that the way we want to handle this is actually literally have each of the data elements included in USCDI. We'd want to do the same cleanup for medication, but I do feel with this recommendation, we've gotten lab to the point where it's useful as a concept and not, you know, not wholly lacking with respect to the fields that are included in USCDI.
So as you note, medication has a long list of items in level 2, which we certainly don't have time to contemplate.
We don't have time to contemplate right now, exactly.
At this moment. So work for another day. This is one of those areas where we have specifically asked ONC if they might be willing to support and charge our work group in revisiting this, even potentially during this annual cycle in preparation for version 4.
And coincidentally, Al has his hand up.
How about that?
So just as a reminder, not to answer your question, Stephen, at least just yet, but regardless of what the work group ends up recommending, individual work group members who are, in addition to members of the work group, are also members of the public, are more than welcome to input their individual comments, including representation from their agencies, if that's applicable, into the USCDI, the draft E3 data element or data class pages for consideration by ONC as an individual comment. Yep. Rather than a comment that comes directly from the work group. So continue to promote that, maybe promote is not the right word, encourage, make available. And that is available, that system is available for making feedback, comments, additions to USCDI by the end of this month. The end of next month. So we have a whole month to do comments and feedback directly onto the website.
That's great. Okay, other items that people really wanted us to have a chance to consider here as a work group. This is your chance. We have put together quite a number of recommendations, And they have all been captured, I believe, in our row K, final recommendations throughout the spreadsheet. Our plan is to work with the ONC team to turn this into a prose document that Arian and I are going to work on with the team over the coming days and hopefully get out to you all for review. I think our plan is to spend the first portion of the next meeting considering any feedback that people have on how those things have been phrased so that we will then be ready to submit a final to the HITACH leadership for distribution. And then Arian and I will be presenting that to the HITACH at our meeting next month. Grace, your hand is up.
Yes, I just have one thing that I wanted to bring up. Tumor board notes. This was something we had discussed. I did submit this in OnDeck. I did send a follow-up email to Al. I'm not sure where that stands, but my understanding is all notes need to be released, but I don't know if it needs to be specifically called out as an item in order to have it recognized. Do you have advice on that?
So are tumor board notes, first off, identified with a link code?
I can send I can send something in the chat, or I can follow up offline.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so first it would have to be a link coded note. We've already suggested that you know, all link coded notes, you know, be transmissible with their code. So if so, I think we've got that covered. If it's not a link coded note, it's work for Loink. There is a sort of a associated question as to whether tumor board notes are part of the designated record set, which is more of a HIPAA information blocking question than a USCDI question, but an interesting one at that.
And then similar clinical decision support outputs that also was submitted to OnDeck, but more information was requested. I did provide more info, but I don't know if it was enough to suffice. So again, outputs of anything kind of clinical decision support, should there be a new note or should it be captured in current notes that are available?
Yeah, and I think some of these items could also come up in our discussions in our phase two work, our task two work, as we are approaching recommendations for the ISA, if these things are missing. Mark, your hand's up.
Yes, Dr. Google tells me that the USCDI task force addressed that question last year. Dan Vreeman responded, yes, there's a link code for tumor board notes.
Okay, so so it would seem that that would be caught up in our recommendation to be able to transmit any link coded note. I think the question then, Grace, also is whether in the certified health IT systems, those notes are getting coded appropriately. And yes, I see you shaking your head. So, all right. In terms of upcoming Charge One meetings, I think I went through that. Basically, we've got some writing to do. We're going to get you a document to review. We're going to discuss it next time. And then in our next meeting, we are going to transition to task two. And all of you will certainly be invited to join the HITACH meeting when your work is presented. And we will welcome that participation if you like. Shall we cut to public comments a little early?
Sure, that'd be great.
Is that acceptable?
Absolutely. We'll put up the public comments slide. And so we'll open up our meeting for public comments. So if you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone has a public comment.
And I will note that there are 17 members of the public with us today, some of whom have presented to us at prior meetings on topics we've discussed today. So really invite any of you to step forward and provide input.
I'm not seeing any hands raised, so I'll turn it back to Stephen and Arian.
All right.
So I get to give everybody back a few.
I think we finished early. This is pretty remarkable.
So I think we've got some work to do. Your co-chairs have some work to do. What I would like to do is make sure that by some clear date certain, every row of the spreadsheet is colored such that we have we've accounted for every recommendation and have a definitive set of recommendation text. Again, encourage the work group members to review any of the uncolored rows currently. Apologies if color coding doesn't work for you, but you can certainly look in the Google Docs to see the code that's been currently applied, and just make sure that we've got definitive markings for the recommendations and disposition for anything that's outstanding.
And since we do have just a few extra minutes, I would ask the members of the work group for any feedback on our process to date. We've had a fast and furious traverse of our task one, and we are going to be moving on to our task two as we close this out. And if anyone has any suggestions that they want to either share publicly or with the co-chairs privately, we are more than open to those. This is your work group, and we want it to work well for you. Mark, your hands up.
Yeah, just the obvious. Kudos to you and to Arian. This was fast and furious, and it was all over the map, as is understandable for something like USCDI. And we are where we are because of your navigation. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a fantastic work group, and it is always that magical moment when you start to figure out how to land the plane.
All right. Well, we are not afraid to give you all 8 minutes back. Go get an extra cup of liquid, and everybody be well. We will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.